Welcome to Torah Macha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we will be studying Yecheskel, Perek Chaf Daled, Chapter 24. As we pointed out in the last few prakim, the Nevuot become harsher as the big day of destruction gets closer. Our chapter is dated the 10th of the 10th month, Asara B'Tevet of the 9th year, counting from Galut Yehoyachin. The date is significant. God tells Yecheskel, "K'tov lecha et shem hayom et etzem hayom hazeh samach melch bavel el Yerushalayim be'etzem hayom hazeh." Yecheskel is to write down the date of the nevuah in this parag, as God is revealing to Yecheskel now, who is currently situated in Bavel, that today, right now, this very day, Nebuchadnezzar is first laying his hands on Yerushalayim. He is right now putting her under siege. The date will live on in history and will become the fast day of Asara B'Tevet. Why is it so important to write down this date? Mitzvah David conjectures that perhaps writing down this date is a way of validating Yecheskel as a true Navi. Remember, as we have seen throughout the Sefer, there have been many Nevi'i Sheker, false prophets, who told the people this day would never come. But if Yecheskel writes down this date for record keeping, and then later the Nevuah is found to be true, then Yecheskel's written word confirms to the people that he is a true Navi, because only a Navi would have had access to the information that the siege of Yerushalayim has begun, while Yecheskel himself was in Bavel. Word didn't travel quickly those days, you know. The events are somber, but for a more lighthearted analogy, writing down the date of the Nevuah is kind of like Yecheskel writing down which card in the playing deck of cards would be chosen in advance of the magician on the stage choosing the card. This way, everyone will know that he knew, and they will understand that they had a true Navi warning them, and that they would be wise to heed Yecheskel's words in the future as well. It will fall on Yecheskel to help the nation begin to rebuild, to gather hope for the future. It is therefore important for the people to be convinced of Yecheskel's authenticity as a Navi and to trust him. Yecheskel still has much he needs to teach the people, which is why God first told him in Perek Bet that his primary purpose as a Navi, at least for now, was V'yadu ki Navi haya b'tocham. Yecheskel was to make sure the people realized that they had a true Navi among them. Later, they wouldn't be able to say that they didn't know, that they weren't warned. Getting back to the importance of this day, there is another way in which the momentous nature of the day is reflected in the psukim, and that is the use of the phrase etzem hayom hazeh, on that very day. This phrase is used several times in Tanakh, always used to mark important events in our history, such as Noah entering the Teva at the time of the Great Flood, Avram's Brit Milah, Tziat Mitzrayim, and the death of our leader Moshe. This day is important in the grand scope of our history. So let's get back to the Pesukim in our Perek. After God tells Yecheskel to memorialize this day in writing, Yecheskel is called upon by God to give two last mishalim. One of these will hit very close to home. Let's start with the first mashal. It is addressed to the Beit HaMeri, the rebellious house of Israel, and the nevuah involves a pot of meat. Sound familiar? This prophecy seems to hark back to a famous slogan coined by the Nevi'i Sheker of the time, which we were introduced to back in Perek Yud Aleph. Back then, we heard the people say, "Hi hasir v'anachnu habasar, we are the meat, Yerushalayim is the pot. Like a pot, Yerushalayim will protect us from harm." At that time, God's retort to this overconfident claim was that Yerushalayim will in fact serve as a pot that holds meat, but instead of the pot being protective, saving the meat from harm, it will become home to dead meat, the corpses of the nation who don't make it out of the pot. In our parak, the imagery of a pot of meat is back, and this time, the imagery evolves further. In Pesukim Gimel through Hay, Yecheskel is asked to set up a pot, making sure to add water to it. Svot hasir, svot v'gam yetzok bo mayim. Place the pot on the fire and add water. The Pesukim go on to say that he's to fill this pot with choice cuts of meat, as well as bones. Bones, the text tells us, will be in the pot as well as outside. They will also serve in place of wood to fuel the fire beneath the pot. And then Yechezkel is told to turn up the flame, bring the pot to a boil, so that even the bones inside will disintegrate and cook. Here are the psukim themselves. Esof netachah eileha, kol netach tov, yarech v'chatev. Gather the meat into the pot, all the good cuts of meat, thigh and shoulder. Mivchar atzamim alei, add bones as well. Mivchar hatzon lakoach, v'gamdur ha'atzamim tachteha. Take the best sheep and place bones underneath it. Retach retacheha, gam bashlu atzameha betocha. Boil it and cook the bones inside it. By the way, you see how the word bone, atzamo, gets repeated over and over here? Keep in mind that the parak started off with the word etzem, etzem hayom hazeh, emphasized twice. Etzem, atzama, etzem, seems like some sort of deliberate play on words, but etzem hayom seems like a precursor for the fate of the atzamot somehow. In the next group of psukim, we will learn more about this pot, which is referred to as Yerushalayim. Lintachel, lintachel hotzia, lo nafal aleha goral. And the pasuk also tells us that in order to save whatever can be salvaged, these cuts of meat will be taken out of the pot, one piece at a time, indiscriminately. As we continue in Pasuk Zion, we learn a bit more about the bloodshed of the city. Ki dama b'tocha haya, al tzchiach sela samatu, lo shevachatu al ha'aretz l'chasod alav afar. The blood that the city spilled was left exposed at the scene of the crime, atop a tzchiach sela, a rock. The psukim explained that there wasn't any attempt by the people to let the blood soak into the earth or pour dust on it to cover it up. And as a result, in Pasuk Chet, God says he will avenge that blood by not allowing it to be covered up. And in Pasuk Tet, God goes even further in his retribution on this Ir HaTamim for their bloodshed. Oy Ir HaTamim, gamani agdil hamadura. God says, I'm going to enlarge the fire under this pot, the city of bloodshed. God will increase the fire until the bones and the pot itself, left empty on the fire, will burn as well. The only way to rid the pot of the filth, the bloodshed, is to direct the flame at the pot itself. So let's stand back and consider this strange metaphor of the pot with its pieces of meat, bones, and its stains. Let's attempt to put the pieces, so to speak, of this mashal together. So far, this is what we can surmise. The pot is Yerushalayim. The city is called Ir HaDamim, the city of bloodshed. The people are the meat in the pot, hoping for protection. The filth that won't come out of the pot are their sins, the bloodshed in the city. The netachim, the pieces of meat that are removed from the pot, these are the people that will be saved from the city. The pot and the pot is left to burn, but the filth, the blood inside of it, won't come out. The story of Shakespeare's Lady Macbeth might help illustrate this idea of blood that won't come out. Remember those words that Lady Macbeth utters? Out, out, damn spot. If you remember your high school Shakespeare, the spot she's referring to is the illusion of a spot of blood on her hand after the murder of King Duncan. She was the force behind that murder. She rubs the spot on her hands, trying to erase it, but she cannot. Here's yet a spot, she cries, desperately rubbing. Here's the small of blood still. Lady Macbeth can't escape the blood of the murder. As far as her own mind is concerned, it is a permanent stain. Just as the pot Yerushalayim is left with guilt that can't be expunged, the filth at the bottom of the pot, the blood of those murdered in the city. No matter what, she can't seem to escape it. And if you think of the netachim, the pieces of meat, they seem to represent the body of Israel, which has been cut up and can only escape piecemeal, one piece at a time. According to the Mefarshim, these cuts of meat represent the various exiles of the nation of Israel. The use of the word netachim might also suggest echoes of the story of Pilegesh B'Givah, the concubine of the city of Giv'ah in Sefer Shoftim. There, a concubine is cut into bloody pieces by her husband, and those pieces are exiled throughout the land of Israel, sent to each Shevet. Interestingly, the body that was cut up earlier in Shoftim was that of a concubine. A concubine, you remember, is what Yecheskel analogized the nation of Israel to in the very last parak, Perkov Gimel, in the tale of Oholah and Oliva. Israel, Yerushalayim, is now being cut up, perhaps by the very lovers who once regaled her, just like in Sefer Shoftim. But now the lovers are the nations who sent her into Galut, Ashur, and Bavel. In the next section of our parak, Yecheskel is told to act something out in preparation for the final destruction. That's nothing new. We're familiar with Yecheskel as a silent Navi, using actions to make his point. In Prakim Dalet and Hey, Yecheskel built dioramas of Yerushalayim and destroyed them. He laid on his side, ate Ezekiel bread, and shaved all the hair on his body. In Perek Yud Bet, he was called upon to act out a person on their way to Galut, in the dark, with the use of clay golah. God told him at that time that in this way, he, Yecheskel, will serve as a mofet, a live example to the people, reminding them of the impending Galut. In our Perek, the action that Yecheskel is to take is in response to a personal tragedy that will befall him. The death of his beloved wife, a woman referred to in the Pasuk as Machmad Einecha, the delight of his eyes. God's instructions to Yecheskel revolve around how to react when he learns of the death of his beloved wife. And interestingly, the man who was asked to exercise silence, Elam, is now being asked to act with ultimate silence, Ha'anik Dom, in response to the death of his wife. He is not to act as a mourner would act. Lo tispod v'lo tivkeh v'lo tavod dimatecha. He is not to eulogize or cry. He is to wear his usual clothes, hat and shoes, and he is not to eat esuadat havra'ah, the first meal that an avel eats with those coming to comfort him. This is all very puzzling and shocking. Why does Yecheskel lose his wife, the delight of his eyes, and why not allow him to mourn? Yecheskel's actions are usually meant to teach. Is this event somehow meant to teach something? In Pasuk Chav Aleph, Yecheskel gets an explanation from God. Emor lebet Yisrael, ko amar Hashem, hineni machalel al mikdashi, ga'on uschem, machmar einechem, machmal nafshechem. Tell the people of Israel that I will destroy my mikdash, your source of strength, the delight of your eyes, and the comfort of your souls. Uvnechem uvnotechem asher ezavtem b'cherev yipolu. Your sons and daughters, which you left, will fall by the sword. This real-life searing tragedy that will affect him, the loss of his wife, will become the symbol of something even larger, a real-life searing tragedy affecting the nation. Just as Yecheskel's beloved wife, the delight of his eyes, is taken from him, so will God take the delight of their eyes from the people, the Beit HaMikdash itself. The analogy continues, Vasitem ka'asher asiti, al safam lo tatu, v'lechem anashim lo tochelu, ufa'archem al roshechem, v'nalechem berogleichem, lo tispitu v'lo tivku. When that day comes, the people are to act as Yecheskel does in response to the tragedy. They too are not to cry or mourn. They are to wear usual clothes and not eat a seudat havra'ah. V'haya Yecheskel lachem lemofet, kechol asher asa ta'asu. Yecheskel will be your mofet, model for what you should do. This word mofet, last used when Yecheskel acted out the exile back in Perek Yud Bet, is now being used to explain Yecheskel's role in modeling a reaction to real-life tragedy. The people are not to mourn, just as he is not to mourn. But why not? Why all these laws demanding Yecheskel and the nation refrain from avelut, from mourning? It's puzzling. Maybe we can think of this command as a command to stay in the pre-avelut stage, the stage of aninut. Immediately after a loved one dies, one does not heed any of the laws of mourning. One doesn't even pray or put on tefillin. It is a state of numbness. And Onin is not ready for comfort yet. Maybe the loss of the Beit HaMikdash, as modeled by Yecheskel's reaction to the death of his wife, puts the nation in a state of aninut. They're numb, not ready to mourn, not ready to be comforted. Maybe, in fact, the loss of the Mikdash is something that one cannot ever take comfort in. Maybe one is even meant to stay in the constant state of aninut over the Mikdash. The words of Pasuk Chav Gimel seem to confirm this possibility. They tell us about the only emotional reaction attributed to the nation who has undergone the tragic loss of the Mikdash. Nahamtem ish el achiv. You will moan one to another. Almost a guttural sound. What's the point of this? Well, instead of nichamtem, which means you will comfort each other, instead they will react with a similar word, nihamtem, the utterance of confused, bewildered sighs. As we have just seen, Yechezkel, the man of actions and few words, has been asked to execute the ultimate silence in response to his personal tragedy. The next psukim, though, reveal that things will now change. He will finally be able to break his silence and speak freely to the public. Vata ben Adam, halo b'yom kach dimei hem et ma'ozam, mesos tifartam, et ma'achmad einehem, v'et ma'asa nafsham, b'nehem uvnotehem, b'yom hahu yavo ha'palit elecha l'hashma'ud oznayim. On the day that I will take the mikdash and your children, the palit, a refugee, will come to you and make himself heard to you. B'yom ahu yipatach picha et ha'palit utadaber v'lo te'alem od. On that day, it says, though the refugee will open your mouth and you will speak and no longer act silent as a mute. V'hayita lahem l'mofet v'yadu ki ani Hashem. And you will be for them a mofet, a model, and they will know that I am Hashem. As Mitzudat David explains, then when the refugee comes, the people will finally believe your words, in the same way that they will believe a mofet, a sign. What is so magical about the day that the refugee comes, which makes it the day in which Yechezkel will finally speak? Perhaps on this day, when Yechezkel's prophecies are proven by the refugee, the people will believe that Yechezkel's words are worth listening to. Because until now, there didn't seem to be a point to his words. As Hashem told Yechezkel way back in the beginning, Im yishmeu ve'im yachdalu, whether they listen to you or not. The nation was skeptical, unlikely to listen, and therefore, the best Yechezkel could do was resort to actions done before their eyes to convey his message. But now that the nevuah of destruction came true, there is finally a chance that the people will start believing in Yechezkel's words and start listening to him. This will be the turning point, the point at which Yechezkel will turn into a man of words, a man whose constituency will finally listen to him as he guides them toward the geulah, the redemption. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilu Nishmat Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander Sender.